Kausalya clung to the king's body and cried, "I shall go with the king to the heavenly world. How can I live without my son and without my husband?" The elders and officers of the palace managed to separate her from the king's body and take her away. Then they discussed the funeral rites. They could not be performed immediately, for Ram and Lakshman had gone to the forest, and Bharat and Shatrughan were far away in their uncle's place. It was decided to send for Bharat and to keep the body immersed in oil till his arrival. The great monarch's remains were kept thus, waiting for Bharat's arrival. Ayodhya, the city of splendor, was sunk in darkness and lamentation. Crowds of women met here and there and reviled Kaikeyi. There was anxiety in men's hearts. The crown prince had gone to the forest. Bharat, too, was far away. Anarchy was feared, for no one in those days could imagine a people going on without a king. After the long night had passed, the ministers, officers, and elders assembled in the hall in the morning. Markandeya, Vamanadev, Kashyap, Katyayan, Gotam, Jabali, and other learned men, with Sumantra and the other ministers, bowed to Vasishtha and said,
"Sir, the night we have passed was like a century. The king is no more. Ram and Lakshman are in the forest. Bharat and Shatrughan are in far-off Kaikeyi, in their grandfather's house. Someone must forthwith be asked to take up the responsibility of rule. A land without a king cannot survive. Order will disappear. Son will not obey father, nor wife her husband. The reins will hold back. Thieves and robbers will range at will. There will be no mutual trust among people. Neither agriculture nor trade can flourish. Without a king, the land must lose its prosperity. The springs of charity will dry up. Festivals and services will cease to be performed in temples. There will be no expounding of the scriptures or epics, nor any listeners. People will no more sleep with doors open. Culture will decline and soon disappear. Penances, vows, enjoyments, learning, all these depend on the king's protection. The beauty of women will vanish. The sense of security will be lost. Men will eat one another up as fish do. Cruelty and misery will grow simultaneously and lay waste the land. For good to prosper and evil to be restrained, a king is essential." It looks as if a great darkness has enveloped the land. Duty is in danger. Let us forthwith secure a king. Vasishtha sent for tried messengers and said to them, "Start at once. Go straight and swift to Kaikeyi. See that you wear no sign of sorrow on your face or show it in your behavior. Bharat should not know that the king is dead. Tell him simply that the family preceptor and ministers want his presence at once in Ayodhya, and bring him along with you with all the speed you may. Tell him nothing about Ram and Sita going to the forest or the king's death on account of grief. To avoid all suspicion, take with you the usual gifts of jewels and precious garments for presentation to the king of Kaikeyi." Soon the messengers were provisioned and equipped for the long journey and furnished with gifts of honor. Mounted on swift and sturdy horses, they sped past rivers and forests, up hill and down dale, and reached Kaikeyi, which was somewhere to the west of the modern Punjab, and found themselves in Rajagriha, its capital, where the Ikshvaku princes were residing in the palace of their maternal uncle. They decided to wait on informing the princes till the next morning. The night the messengers arrived, But it had evil dreams and woke up in the morning filled with anxiety as to what they might portend. His face showed the state of his mind. His companions tried to entertain him with dance and mirth to make him forget his cares, but did not succeed. He said to himself, "It seems to me that death is approaching my brother Ram, or Lakshman, or myself. They say that an early morning dream does not fail to be fulfilled, and mine has been a terrible dream. I'm full of fear. I don't know what to do." Just then the messengers were announced. The king of Kaikeya and his son Yudhajit received the envoys with due courtesy. They paid their respects to the king and the princes, then turned to Bharat and said, "The priests and ministers send you their blessings and request you to return at once to Ayodhya. They want us to convey to you that the need for your presence there is most urgent." Bharat questioned the messengers after the welfare of all at home. They replied, "O tiger among men, all are well whose welfare is dear to you. Lakshmi, the goddess of sovereignty, whose abode is the lotus, calls you. So mount your chariot without loss of time." There was an enigmatic thought in this greeting, for according to them, Bharat was to be installed on the throne. The prince took leave of his uncle and grandfather for returning home, and preparations were made for his departure. The old king and Yudhajit collected rare and valuable things of their country to be sent as gifts to King Dasarath and Prince Ram of Ayodhya. Bharat and Satrughan mounted their chariots and started with a big retinue toward Ayodhya. They traveled fast, unmindful of fatigue, and by forced marches reached Ayodhya on the morning of the eighth day. As he approached the city, Bharat's mind was filled with misgiving. Nothing seemed to be as it was before, and the air seemed heavy with disaster. He asked the charioteer, "Why does the city wear such a strange look? I do not see the usual crowds of people going in and coming out. In the gardens outside the city, one used to see young men and women with bright, cheerful faces. But now, they all seem so sad." Bharat's chariot entered the city through the victory gate. The streets, houses, and temples were bare and unadorned. The faces of the people looked drawn and famished. "Why are the musical instruments silent?" he asked. "Why are the citizens not decked with flowers and sandal paste? These are all bad signs. I cannot repress my anxiety." Inauspicious omens were seen everywhere. Bharat concluded that some great misfortune had overtaken the city, and that was the reason why he had been so hastily sent for. He entered Dasarath's palace. Not seeing him anywhere, his anxiety increased. He then entered Kaikeyi's palace. When she saw her son, she jumped from her golden couch to embrace him. He bent down and respectfully touched her feet. She kissed his head and welcomed him with maternal blessings. "Did you have a good journey?" she asked. "Are your uncle and grandfather well? Tell me all about them." He answered, "The journey took 7 days. All our people at Kaikeyi are happy and well. Grandfather and uncle send you their love. They have sent rich gifts for you, but these will arrive later. I have come in advance. The envoys hurried me, saying there was urgent work demanding my presence here. What is all this about? I went to the king's palace to pay him my respects. He was not to be found there, and here, too, his couch is empty. Perhaps he is with one of my senior mothers. I must go and see him and tender my respects." When Bharat, innocent of heart and unaware of what had happened, said this, the foolish queen, intoxicated with a new sense of power, answered, "My child, your father had his full share of the blessings of this life. His fame was great. He performed all the sacrifices enjoined by tradition. He was a refuge for the good. He has now entered the higher world and joined the gods." On hearing this, Bodit fell down, uttering a cry, his long arms stretched out on the ground. Then, rising, he looked at his father's empty bed and sobbed like a destitute orphan. The mighty hero threw his godlike frame on the earth and wept like a child in uncontrolled grief. Looking at her son, who lay on the ground like a big fallen tree, Kaikeyi said, "Arise, O king, stand up. It is not right for a king thus to mourn and roll on the ground. Honor and glory are waiting for your acceptance. You are to uphold the Dharma or duty and perform sacrifice in the way of your royal fathers. Your intelligence shines like the noonday sun. No misfortune dare come near you. O strong, brave-hearted son, stand up." Bodit's mind was immaculate, spotless. He did not see all that Kaikeyi had put in her appeal. After lamenting long, he got up and said, "When I went to my uncle's house, I had hoped that Ram's installation as regent would come off soon, and that on my return I would see the great festive ceremonies. How differently have things turned out? How am I to bear this calamity? No more shall I see my father's face. What did he die of? How did he get the illness? And I was not by his side when he lay sick. It was given to Ram to tend him in his last moments. How affectionate the king was towards me. If some dust settled on my body, he would wipe it with his hand. And how soft and pleasing was his touch. And it was not given to me to serve him in his need. But, mother, where is Ram? Hereafter, he is both father and preceptor to me. I must see him at once and bow down to his feet. He is now my sole refuge. What was my father's last message to me? I want his very words." Kaikeyi's answer had to be consistent both with truth and her designs. She was pulled in contrary directions by her culture and her ambition. She found words which conveyed that the king did not think of Bodit in his last moments. She also wished to prepare him for the rest of the news, so she said, "Your father breathed his last crying, 'Ram, Lakshman, Sita.' These were his last words. He died saying, 'It is not given me to live to see Ram, Lakshman, and Sita return. They who will shall be happy.'" Listening to this, Bodit gathered that Ram and Lakshman too were absent from the king's side. His grief increased, and he asked Kaikeyi, "Where were they? What business took them away from our father's side during his last moments?" Hoping to pacify him, Kaikeyi said, "My son, Ram put on the garments of an ascetic, and taking Lakshman and Sita with him, went to the Dundak forest." Bodit's amazement knew no bounds. He asked, "I understand nothing of what you are saying. What sin did Ram commit that he should undertake such a penance? Did he rob any Brahmin or cause bodily hurt to any innocent person or desire somebody else's wife? Why did he have to go to the forest? Who laid on him this penance?" Kaikeyi replied, "Ram committed no crime. He neither robbed nor harmed anyone. And it was not in Ram's nature to cast eyes of desire at other people's wives. What happened was that, seeing that preparations were afoot for installing him as crown prince and regent, I approached the king for your sake and secured the fulfillment of two boons he had long ago granted to me. I asked that the kingdom should go to you and that Ram should be exiled to the forest. Bound by his past promise, the king agreed. Ram has therefore gone to the forest with Sita and Lakshman. Unable to bear this separation, your father expired of grief. So do not waste yourself in vain lamentations now. Think now what you should do. You know your duty. Your duty is to accept the burden of kingship. I did all this for your sake, and you should accept the fruit of my action in the spirit in which I acted. The city and kingdom have come into your possession without your wanting or working for it. Following the injunctions of Vasishtha and other learned men, perform duly your father's funeral ceremonies, and then prepare for the coronation. You are a warrior. You have inherited your father's kingdom. Attend to what has fallen to you as your duty.